Okay, dear Dhamma friends, hope you can hear me. Actually, we were discussing Kaggavisana Sutta, which is available in Kuddaka Nikaya, that is the shorter discourses, and this is coming under the Sutta Nipata. And so we have discussed almost 29 or 28 verses. So this whole sutta consists of verses. And each and every verse is attributed to a Pacheka Buddha. Pacheka Buddha sometimes we call as kind of a private Buddha, where he realizes the Dhamma himself, but not capable of explaining it in detail, so that he is not establishing a member of Sangha. So he is not establishing Sasana in the similar way like Sammasambuddha does, but he too is self-enlightened. Now, each and every verse explained here in this Kaggavisana Sutta is attributed to Pacheka Buddha. So, after his enlightenment, he is explaining certain salient features of his practice, certain important characteristics, or what made him enlightened. And so, likewise, certain Dhamma aspects are revealed in this Sutta when they are explaining each and every verse. Now, we have come to the 67th verse. Actually, it is not the 67th of the whole sutta. Rather, it is starting from the Sutta Nipata. So, today we are going to explain number 67. That is the 29th verse in this Kaggavisana Sutta. And it goes like this. Vipittikatvana sukhaṁ dukkhañca pubbevaccha somanassa domanassaṁ Laddhanu pekkhaṁ samathaṁ visuddhaṁ eko chare kaggavisāna kappu. Now there are certain important parts highlighted here. Vipittikatvāna sukhaṁ dukhañca. So this indicates that sukha and dukkha, that's happiness and say pain or unhappiness, have somehow kept aside, having left behind pleasure and pain. So this is one indication that now the mind is more associating the equanimity, because the happy or pleasurable feelings as well as the painful feelings are kept aside, so that mind is more associating the neutral feelings. So basically now one is dwelling in the equanimity. So that is indicating in the first phrase. Pubbeva cha somanassa domanassa. So that indicates certain aspects of the mind. Previous part is very much related to the body, where body doesn't go through too much of pleasurable feelings or any painful feelings. It is more into very much equanimous feelings. At the same time, already the somanasa domanasa, the what is the happiness and the mental some sort of unhappiness, that is also kept aside. So that means the mind also in a kind of an equilibrium. Mind is also in a kind of a balance, also in an equanimity. Laddhanu pekkhaṁ samathaṁ visuddhaṁ. Now as a result of that, one has gained upekkha. One has gained equanimity. Samathaṁ visuddhaṁ, and that is more purified. Having gained purified equanimity and serenity. Eko chare kaggavisana kappu. One may live like a rhinoceros horn. Now, this verse actually talks about the fourth jhana. And the story, background of story also mentioned about it. So, according to the commentary, so there is one king, even though he is a king, he was capable of attaining fourth jhana. So, since he is capable of attaining fourth jhana, so he is more inclined towards spiritual practice. So what he did was, he left the palace, he left the kingdom, and he became a monk. And ultimately, he became a Pacheka Buddha. So this is not the time of Sammasambuddha. So these are pre-Sammasambuddha period that we are talking. So at that time, there was a special kind of a king who is capable of attaining fourth jhana, and he enjoyed it. He really appreciated it more than the kingdom, more than the kingship. So he left the kingship, he left the kingdom, and he became a monk, and then he continuously practiced. So he further improved vipassana knowledges. As a result of that, he was able to become a Paccheka Buddha. So after he becoming Paccheka Buddha, he's explaining these certain characteristics of the fourth jhana. Now, before we go on to getting on to fourth jhana, so let's little bit analyze how one may attain jhana. So jhana, in a sense, we can say kind of a combination of certain mental factors. So when certain characteristics of the mind is well attuned, certain very good mental characteristics are well in line, then we can say, okay, mind is attained jhana. So especially there are five characteristics or five jhana factors typically mentioned, and when those are quite prominent and are in quite a good balance, then one can say one is in a particular jhana. So depending on how many jhana factors are available, so the material jhana or the rupa jhana are categorized. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. So likewise, jhanas are categorized based on how many jhana factors are present during that jhanic experience. Now, how to get into a jhana? So this is another interesting point probably we all might like to understand, because as practitioners, we have heard about jhana. We may sometimes accidentally experience them, but we don't really capable of attaining it again and again or master the jhana. So it's like a different subject in a way. Actually, jhana, there are certain controversial points as well, because sometimes some teachers say, so pre-Buddhist teachers also have jhana, but they are not really identical with Buddha's jhana. So this is one aspect sometimes teachers highlight. So Buddha also has taught about jhana, and pre-Buddhist teachers also had jhana, but these two are two different things. So this is one aspect certain teachers are holding. Another way sometimes people used to say, before the Buddha there was jhana, and Buddha too used the same kind of jhana. So this is another aspect. So it doesn't matter anyway. Jhanas we can simply translate as absorptions, and they are more heightened mental concentrated states. So your mind get concentrated, your mind get locked, so your mind get kind of an unwavering, unshakable state when mind is attained a jhana. So therefore sometimes people like it, because it's a kind of an escape from the hustle and bustle of the world. So there are various difficulties, various problems in the world. So always you are going through many, many issues. So you have troubles at home, you have troubles at the, say, working place. There is pressure coming from peers. So there are some political issues. Likewise, so many problems are there in our lives. So if one is able to attain jhana during that period of time, there is no any such problem at all. Therefore, sometimes people used to have this kind of a temporary freedom using jhana. And again, since it is a tranquility practice, so one has to promote tranquility. One has to promote concentration. So if you are promoting investigation, then it is somewhat opposite. Investigation is more inclined towards wisdom, that is the vipassana. But on the other hand, the concentration is more inclined towards tranquility, samatha. So here actually the jhanas are more into the samatha practice. So therefore we have to discuss a little bit of samatha practice today. Suppose you are practicing anapanasati and you are able to maintain your attention at the breath. You are aware of in-breath, you are aware of out-breath, and as a result of that, now mind is somewhat restrained. Previously, it was not so. It is jumping here and there. But because of your continuous practice, assume that now mind is staying somewhat closer to you, or it is being with the breath. Say 10 breaths, 20 breaths, 30 breaths, 50 breaths, you can continuously watch. So likewise, we have to have a kind of a gradual growth. So you can't immediately have 100 breaths, 500 breaths consecutively paying your attention immediately within a day, which is very unlikely. But typically what happens is that you are starting with Anapanasati, then you are able to maintain some amount of concentration. So you are able to be aware of 10 breaths, for example. Next day also you are practicing, then you are able to pay attention to 12 breaths. Next day also you are continuing, then you are able to pay attention to 13 breaths. So likewise, it's a very slow progress. So you are improving your concentration, you are improving your mindfulness, but it is very slow. It doesn't matter, by the way. Actually, if you are expecting too quick results, so that is sure a kind to be a failure. Because if you are expecting very quick results or instant results, that indicates certain impatience in yourself, which is detrimental to the practice. So too much expectations are related to the craving. So therefore, the spiritual practice is quite opposite to craving. So having too much of expectations is a burden to the practice. It is not only to the vipassana, even to the samatha practice. So having too much expectations, expecting today I will be attaining first jhana, today I will be attaining first jhana. So that kind of an expectation sometimes bothers the mind, sometimes makes your mind more burdened. Rather than that, if you are able to really enjoy the present moment, say you are able to pay attention to the in, pay attention to the out breath, and you are quite satisfied with it. So you are not being sort of victimized to the craving of becoming a jhana person or kind of jhana attainer. Rather, you enjoy the present moment. You enjoy the in breath. You enjoy the out breath. So this indicates kind of a internal awakening. So this is a very subtle breathing process going on in the body, and you are able to pay attention to that breathing process. So there are many indications that how your mind is well restrained in that sense. So if you have to be successful, then you have to discard all the unnecessary signs, perceptions, attitudes you have related to the world. So if you have sensual desires, you can't do it. If you have ill will, you can't do it. If you are drowsy, you can't do it. If you are lazy, you can't do it. When your mind is restless, you can't do it. When you have so many regrets, you can't do it. And if you are not confident about your practice, or if you have so many doubts, still you can't do it. So basically, the five hindrances have to be fairly subsided. Then only you are capable of developing the mind. So these jhana factors actually counteract with the hindrances. For example, if you consider the vitakka, applied thought. So when again and again you are applying your mind to a particular object, so that activates the mind. That makes your mind little occupied with some task. You are assigning a particular task. So he can't simply sort of lethargic, since there is a task to do. That is a task at hand. So therefore, when you are having very active applied thought, so that is contradicting or removing the svatan topa, thinamidda. On the other hand, when you are able to observe very carefully whatever the phenomena under your check on which you are being mindful, so now you are investigating, so then there can't be any doubts, because you are carefully observing, carefully analyzing. So each and every subtle aspects you are able to observe. So that eliminates any kind of a perplexity, any kind of a doubt in the mind. So vichikicca can't be there when that vichara, or what we call as the investigation, is available. Sustained thought is available. And when you are happy, when things are going well, when the mind is rapturous, quite pleasant, then on such kind of a environment, there can't be any ill will. You can't be unhappy. You can't be angry on such situation because your mind is quite happy, pleasurable, and rapturous. So therefore, rapture, piti, is against the ill will. And then, as you are continuing, you are feeling comfortable, your body feel comfortable, your mind feel comfortable. So therefore, mind doesn't want to wander. Why our mind wander? Basically because it doesn't find happiness within. Internally, we are not happy. Internally, we are somewhat frustrated. So that is why mind is going in search of happiness from outside. But when the mind is internally happy, when the body is internally tranquil, so mind doesn't need to wander. Rather, it finds a very pleasant abiding within yourself. So, on such situation, when you are feeling comfortable, when you are feeling quite happy, pleasurable, internally, body and the mind, so then restlessness and regrets can't stay. So, uddaccha kukkuccha nivarana, restlessness and regret can't stay when your body and mind feel quite comfortable, quite happy. And when your mind is quite stable and staying with a particular selected object, firm with one object, not jumping. Say you are simply watching the breath, again and again it is watching the breath. If you are watching rising and falling, again and again watching the rising and falling. If this is the situation, so there is no way of sensual desire. Because sensual desire is the one triggering the mind to jump from one object to the other object. But here, the opposite, sensual desire is absent, therefore mind is quite stable, steady, well focused onto a particular selected object. Therefore, whenever your mind is one-pointed or concentrated, so that indicates sensual desire is also subsided. So, as per this explanation, you can understand, so these jhana factors or the concentration qualities are quite opposite to the hindrances. So, when these jhana factors are quite powerful, you can't have any hindrance in the mind. Now, first jhana, when we consider, so one has to eliminate all the sensual desires, one has to have a fair amount of seclusion, then only one can somehow motivate these jhana factors, or you can trigger these jhana factors, you can develop these jhana factors, and when they are coming to a certain level, one can say, okay, now one is in the first jhana. So, therefore it is mentioned when this is happening, when someone is entering first jhana, it is a very pleasurable experience because till this time mind was wandering, jumping and monkey mind. So, it's a very troublesome mind, but now it is quite capable, it is quite stable. Just stay with the breath, just stay with the counterpart sign. So likewise, so mind has become more stable and it is somewhat secluded, doesn't want to associate too much of sensual objects, rather it has found its kind of a seclusion. So because of that, accompanied by applied thought, accompanied by sustained thought, so then rapturous and pleasurable environment in the mind makes the mind absorb to that kind of a situation. So this is what we call as first jhana. So Buddha is giving a very beautiful simile using some old technology. So in the good old days, there was no soap. So Buddha mentioned there is some sort of what you call as bath powder. So there is some sort of bath powder available. So a person, whenever he want to have a bath, so what he does is he is sprinkling water to it. So then all the bath powder become as a one lump. It is not oozing and it is just a one lump. Now it is very much like a a soap. So previously it was just the powder, and once you are putting water to it, once you are sprinkling water to it, then it is coherent and it is just a one lump of kind of a thing which you can apply on your body. So on that situation, Buddha mentioned each and every particle of this bath powder is wet, is immersed with water, and so that they are well bounded together. Similarly, Buddha mentioned when one attains first jhana, so his whole body is immersed in this kind of a very secluded, very serene kind of a situation, blissful situation, blissful experience. So he's experiencing it, he's enjoying it. So this is how Buddha explained the first jhana. When one enters it, so he is able to have a kind of a body pervaded with such kind of a very pleasant experience. And then one may understand, okay, the first jhana has certain disadvantages. So again and again, your mind has to be applied to a particular object. Say if you are going through anapanasati, it produces kind of a, say, sort of a light, sort of a counterpart sign. So again and again, you have to apply your mind to that. This is a little bit of an activity, and you have to investigate that object, primary object. This is also a little bit of an activity. So it's somewhat troublesome. So at the beginning, it appears quite blissful. But as you are experiencing it for a long time, then probably you may understand, okay, this is a kind of a movement in the mind. This is more closer to a hindrance. So I have to again and again apply my mind to this counterpart sign. So this is a little troublesome. So how, if I don't have to do it, mind is quite stable with this object forever. First time I may be applying my mind to the object and I do a little bit of investigation. After that, mind stick to it. I don't need to intervene. I don't need to push again. I don't need to apply it again and again. Mind stays very stable way, well concentrated manner with the given object. So that kind of a feeling when certain person gets, so his mind is more inclined towards the second jhana. So he discards applied thought and the sustained thought. Now the mind is filled with rapture, filled with, pleasant, abiding, happiness, and well concentrated. So at that time, the mind is well concentrated. So the pleasure is born of concentration. Mind is fairly stable, doesn't move. It's quite stable, and with that stability of the mind, one may feel quite rapturous. So that's a beautiful simile given for that. Buddha mentioned there's a kind of a lake where it doesn't get water from east direction. It doesn't get water from, say, west direction. It doesn't get water from north direction. It doesn't get water from south direction. And even the rain is not raining at this time. But still, it has spilling out. Very cool water is spilling out. How? That is because of a sprint available in the bottom. So this sprint is producing very cool water, and as a result of that, the whole pond is spilling out. So similarly, Buddha mentioned the second jhana, the person who is having second jhana has internal happiness. So he doesn't want to borrow happiness from outside. He doesn't need to get happiness from outside through his senses. Rather here, out of his own practice, he is producing happiness. So it's an internal happiness, internal sprint he is having, internal fount he is having, and that fount, that sprint is having enough pleasure, enough rapture, so he is therefore quite present. And when we consider the third jhana, so as one continue the second jhana, probably he may understand, okay, this happiness or this pleasure is also somewhat gross. Now mind is more refined. Mind is more sensitive. As a result of that, this rapturous feelings, sometimes producing goosebumps, sometimes making some sort of a wave kind of effect, kind of electrocuting kind of effect, floating kind of effect. So this is a little disturbing. How about having more stable, more comfortable, feeling at ease, that is more mature? So that is the sort of indication, inclination that a person may have when he is reaching the third jhana. So therefore he calms down rupture, which is more vulnerable, which is more gross, and his mind is more tends towards the contentment. So the mind is well contented, feeling at ease, comfortable, that's it. So his mind is staying in that kind of a concentration. So that is the third jhana. Now, there's a beautiful simile there also Buddha explained. Buddha mentioned there are, assume that there are lotuses, red lotuses, and different types of white lotuses available in a particular pond. And certain lotuses are still underwater. Since they are underwater, so the whole lotus is filled with water. It is immersed with water. Similarly, Buddha mentioned the person who is in the third jhana is immersed in this contentment. It's a more mature kind of a contentment, more mature kind of a happiness. It doesn't disturb the mind. So therefore, it is more kind of a praiseworthy experience. And it is not derived through the senses. So third jhana in that sense is another very pleasant abiding. And when one reaches the fourth jhana, so there his mind is further matured and his mind is more inclined towards equanimity. So whatever the pleasure, whatever the rapture, applying thought, sustained thought, so all these are little activities, little disturbing to the mind, but the inherent quality of the mind is equanimity, very much like the water. So when you are adding something to water, it becomes colorful. Say you are adding a particular color, then it becomes colorful. If you are adding sugar, then it just become tasty. If you are adding orange, it become another flavor. So that basically disturbs the original nature of the water. Basically disturbs the primary or natural characteristics of the water. So similarly, the mind, if we consider the natural characteristics of the mind, it is neither painful nor pleasurable. It is more equanimous. So therefore, when one reaches the fourth jhana, so his mind is more inclined towards that kind of a stable, pure, quite mindful and equanimous kind of a situation. So now he is discarding that whatever the gross contentment, gross pleasures, gross ruptures, everything he is discarding. Already there is no any kind of a despair, there is no any kind of regrets or sorrowful thoughts in the mind, and mind is also not agitated, everything is quite calm, balanced. On such situation, okay, now he enters the fourth jhana. Now the fourth jhana is also consists of certain, say, jhana factors, we can say. It's more concentrated, one-pointedness is there. And there is no rupture, there is no sorrow, there is no any kind of pleasurable feeling. Rather, it is more stable, pure, equipped with mindfulness and have equanimity. So Buddha is giving a simile for this. Suppose there is some person having a very, say, large white cloth, and he is putting it around his head to down. So from head to toes, he is putting this white color cloth. So now we can't see him. So the whole body is covered with this white cloth. Similarly, Buddha mentioned, when one reaches fourth jhana, so his mind is very purified, quite mindful. So such pure mindful state is available for him. So he is filled or pervaded with such kind of a situation. So that is the simile, that is the experience that Buddha explains with respect to the fourth jhana. So these are all very interesting information, and you can see, as I have mentioned here, the first jhana has five jhana factors. As we move forward, we are dropping two, we which are more prone to say hindrances, and then we are reaching the second dhyana, which is more pure and more concentrated, more stable. And then one reaches the third jhana after discarding the pleasure, and one now have kind of a contentment, more feeling at ease. And then when one reaches the fourth jhana, so his mind is further purified, more mindful, and more into the equanimity. So this kind of an evolution is there in the jhana. And so in this verse, actually, the fourth jhana is really appreciated, and the qualities attributed to the fourth jhana, having left behind pleasure and pain. So now he is simply on the equanimous feeling, and then previously discarded joy and rejection. So there is no any sort of sorrows and kind of delights available in the mind. So mind is more in a stable middle level, and then having gained purified equanimity and serenity. So the mind is free from any defilements, all the hindrances are subsided, mindfulness is very sharp. So if one is able to have this sort of a mind state, so Buddha in this verse actually mentioned, just guard it, just keep it, just hold it, or hold in the sense, just maintain it, which is more refreshing, more nourishing the mind. So this is the message given in this verse. So with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Sorry about that. I think we have about 10 questions today.
Right.
The first one, actually there's two appreciations which I'll say. One of them, they're a little bit old, but anyway, because we've started a little bit late this year, I'll just say it. Dear Bhante, today is 1st of January and I'd like to wish you and Bhante, the most venerable and most venerable local Swami Rwanda, the magnificent organizing team and all the participants, Satimat Vasarakweva. May this year be filled with Shraddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Pranya. Wish you all the very best, safe and peaceful year. That gives opportunity and practice for the realization of the truth. Thank you, and with metta, it's the end.
Good, good. I do wish the same.
There's also another appreciation. Dear Venerable Bhante, thank you so much for the Dhamma talk you delivered on the 31st of December and the 1st of January on the retreat. It was such an eye-opener. I felt as if a mirror had been brought in front of me by a Kalyana Mitra. Thank you so much, Bhante. Lots of merits for you, Bhante, and for all your teachers and parents. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. With metta, that's the end. So first question, Dear Bhante, could you please explain the real meaning of prapancha? Much merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
That's actually a deep subject. So prapancha, I mean, we can simply translate as mental proliferations. So what happens is, now whenever a thought appears in the mind, we don't just keep it as it is, we tend to add to it, we tend to multiply it, we are adding our likes and dislikes into it. And that is actually common to all the senses. Say, when you are seeing something through your eyes, so you are simply capturing the color and maybe the shape, but we do a lot of constructions onto it, we are making a lot of preparations, we are adding to it. Assume that you have some cultural biases, you are learned through certain things, or you have learned the experiences. So you are putting all these colors into the image, all these colors into what you have seen. And as a result of that, now it becomes something different, not the original thing. So therefore, Buddha, actually in the Madhupindika Sutta of Majjhima Nikaya, so this whole genesis is very well explained. So this whole procedure is very well explained. Actually, when your eye meets with a kind of a visual object, so the awareness happens, eye consciousness happens. That's a natural phenomenon, natural event. And then as a result of that, the contact is there, the contact produces feeling. So till feeling, this is a kind of a causal reaction. It's common even to the Buddha, to even to Arahant. So this is a causal reaction that is happening. But then what happened is, so we are sort of triggered by the feeling, and now we want to know, we want to recognize what it is. Yang vedeti tang sanjanati. So now you are putting your hand into the picture, and now you need to recognize what it is. Who is he? Who is she? So likewise, you are doing some sort of an inquiring. So you are trying to recognize. So that further triggers thinking. Now you are putting a thought into the situation. Now you are actively participating into the picture. Till feelings are there, actually it's a kind of a causal reaction happens, common to everyone. So when we start putting our hand after the feeling, we are inquiring what it is, what is the, whether I have seen him before, whether he's my friend, my so and so. So likewise, some more additions, your purposeful thinking is coming to the picture. And that is the middle part, where our active participation happens. Now this is very much like gathering momentum internally in the mind. And once that momentum is gathered, ultimately what happens is, so this momentum overpowers ourselves, overwhelm ourselves. And it triggers too much thinking, overthinking. And now we are thinking in one direction, we are thinking in another direction, we are thinking in another direction. So likewise, it is very much like going in many, many different directions. Our thought processes are now multiplied. And ultimately, this is becoming what we call as papancha, as mental proliferation. And now we are helpless. Now you can't stop. Now you have become a victim of the whole thinking process. So this is the kind of the bad side or the repercussion of this mental proliferation. So that produces a lot of stress. That produces depression. That produces kind of internal conflicts. And you are becoming angry. You are becoming jealous. And you are using bad words. And you are getting into quarrels. And all the things are the production or the results of this mental proliferation. So therefore, mental proliferation is a kind of a very interesting subject and well explained in Madhupindika Sutta how it is generating. And Buddha in many cases explained that you got to reduce mental proliferation. And therefore, if one is able to calm down mental proliferation, Buddha very precisely, very beautifully mentioned, you are able to calm down all the defilements. So if you are not triggering yourself, if you are not sort of tempted to mentally proliferate, even when you see something beautiful, even when you hear something beautiful, so that indicates certain restrainment in your mind. You are not mentally proliferate, rather you are able to maintain a very quiet mind, you are able to maintain inner silence. In that situation, if you are able to maintain such situation, all the different kinds of defilements are not getting a chance. So those defilements, those traits available in our mind now starts to calm down. So they start to fade away. So calming down mental proliferation is one very important aspect of Vipassana meditation. So if you are practicing Vipassana meditation, if you are still doing a lot of thinking, overthinking, mentally proliferate, so that indicates still you haven't come to the path. That indicates still you haven't really get on to the path. But on the other hand, if you are calming down yourself, if you are able to reduce mental proliferation, now less thinking, less rumination, so that indicates that you are improving. Yeah.
Question number, I think it's 4 of...
I can't see you. Ah, okay, now I can see you.
Sorry, question number 4 or I think it's 12, this question entitled. Dear Bhante, could you kindly explain how you practice awareness continuation during changing postures, Bhante? Much appreciated and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, it may happen naturally. So at the beginning, actually, when you are changing the posture, your awareness or mindfulness may break. So that is because still you can't handle it. But as you move forward, you can do it. I mean, it's not a big deal. So at the beginning, actually, you want to have the same posture, then it is easily you can maintain awareness. But once you change your posture, you can't maintain it. You are being distracted. But slowly, as you move forward, you are capable of even maintaining awareness, even these posture junctions. Actually, that is more in clear comprehension, sati sampajanya, that not merely maintaining mindfulness, but you are able to maintain mindfulness even at these posture junctions. So then it indicates that you have full awareness, so clear knowing how these changes are happening. So you are changing from walking to sitting, say sitting to walking. So in between these, say posture junctions, still you can be aware. So there is no any special method to do it. Rather, as you are improving your mindfulness spreads, your mindfulness enhances. Your awareness enhances so that you can maintain mindfulness, continuous awareness, even at the posture junctions.
Question number 5 of 12, mindful sitting. Venerable Sir, I'm continuing my meditation practice daily for more than 1 year. Thank you very much for your guidance towards my success and organizing committee for their continuous effort towards success of this program. I do daily practice in the morning, about 45 minutes to 1 hour before starting my other work. I can feel my improvement for day-to-day activities. My daily meditation experience since last month is as follows. After sitting for meditation, I pay attention to the abdomen rising and falling, and very quickly my mind settles down. Then my mind started to be blown away for past and future, and then again thinking about how to write the report, etc. This situation happened because I don't have any kind of sensation on my body to pay attention. After settling my mind, I feel like lost and without having anything to hang around. Immediately after I realize this situation, I take my mind back to the body. Sometimes I can see a big flashlight sort of thing surrounding me. I just opened my eyes and closed again to go away from this situation. Appreciate your thoughts and guidance to improve my meditation.
Yeah, it seems like you are getting some concentration. So that is why the light is indicated. So time to time when your mind is well aligned, then the light appears. So that may happen frequently in the future. So if you are continuing your practice, and particularly when the mind is developing concentration, so this light may going to appear. So, but anyway, you don't need to get excited because of this. Rather, you continue your practice, especially maintain your attention on the breath, because that is the one supporting this phenomena. Actually, light is a product or light is a result. So, you can't make it. Rather, you have the control onto developing mindfulness. So, as we develop mindfulness, the concentration develops. As a result of that, this light is going to appear. Then it may become more brighter or more stable. Then you can actually even use to attain absorptions, as we discussed today. So therefore, continue your practice. So you are going through some experiences, so nothing to worry. So let it happen. Even if it doesn't happen, it also doesn't matter, because these are indications of concentration. Actually, if you are considering the vipassana practice, so very high concentration is not a must. If you have fair amount of necessary amount of concentration, that is more than enough for the insight practice. But if you have too much concentration, you can get into jhana. So therefore, having it or not having it is not a big thing. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 12. This is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, this is regarding a walking session experience. I was fortunate to find some time to follow your last retreat via Zoom and was doing multiple mindfulness practice sessions. My usual walking practice is to start focusing on the sole of the foot, noting left and right. The impact on the heel when the foot touches the ground, how the pressure spreads across the sole, hard and smoothness when the foot is on the floor, hot and cold patches along the sole, and the movements are some of the sensations that I observe. After a few rounds, the noting naturally stops and the walking process starts to happen automatically. Usually the sensations start to fade away gradually from this point onwards. However, during this particular session, the sensations become blurred, but started breaking down into small bits, then feeling as a flux. I could feel thousands of small bits of these sensations across the sole while walking, appearing and disappearing. These tiny sensations remain blurred or bleached until the foot touches the ground, and then they seem to convert to hard at one end and soft at the opposite end, giving the notion of foot touching the ground. I could not distinguish which one is touching which one, the foot or the ground, just many tiny sensations appearing and disappearing. This observation lasted until the session ends. Thought of reporting to Bhante with metta. That's the end of the report.
Yeah, good. So this indicates certain improvement because as we start, due to lack of mindfulness, we can't distinctly recognize this phenomena. But when we improve mindfulness, then we can properly, clearly see many phenomena. Then more information is available and we are observing them more and more. But at a given time, so this change happens. Now everything become blurred. Now everything become very much like mixed. Everything like faded, blurred. So that is actually how this whole process evolves. So rationally we might think, okay, our mindfulness is improving, clear comprehension is improving. So more and more information, more and more details, subtle details going to be available more and more. So that would be the rational that we may have. But the opposite happens. So after some time, it changes, it evolves. So then you can't distinctly recognize whether it is, which element or which kind of feeling, which kind of thought, you can't really distinctly recognize. But there is something is there. So all, by the way, arising and passing away. Suppose you are doing walking meditation and there are so much of different sensations available, you can't distinctly know what it is. But you know very well, it is very fast, very quickly passing away. This is good. So you don't need to push your mind to recognize whether it is pleasurable, painful, equanimous, or whether it is earth element, water element, or something like that. Rather, just accept there is a very subtle feeling, there is a subtle sensation, that's it. And that is quite momentary. That is quite transient. And you are simply observing that transiency. You are observing that inconstant nature of this phenomena. And that is more than enough. And that is more, producing more deep knowledge in ourselves. And it is also producing some dispassion towards the whole process. So more and more understanding produce more dispassion and more knowledge, more understanding. And then ultimately mind may withdraw from the process and try to become secluded. So you are doing well. Just continue your practice.
Question number 7 of 12. General question. Dear Venerable Bhante, is the, do my best to pronounce this, Yoga Shrama Kati Kavata available somewhere? I would like to read it. With metta, that's the end. Did it make sense?
Yogashrama Kathikavata.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, Yogashrama Kathikavata. Yes, it's available. Probably I can put it to the chat if I find it now. So if you need the Sinhala version, I think I have it I can give it to you. So this is what actually we have to follow as the forest monasteries belonging to Sri Kalyani Yogashrama Sanstha. I mean, started by Most Venerable Mātara Sri Ñānārāma Mahathero, Most Venerable Kadavadvi Sri Jinavansa Mahathero. So they started this forest tradition in Sri Lanka, and we have to adhere to the act. So Yogashrama Kathikavata is that act. And I can put it to the chat. So if you like to read it, you can read it. You can continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question number 8 of 12. General question. Bhante, what does it mean by upasampada? What happens then? With metta, that's the end of the question.
So someone seems interested in ordaining, it seems. So actually, upasampada is where you are getting you are getting more sila. Now, if you consider five precepts, now as a lay person, you are observing five precepts. And then, say, during the uposatha day, during the poya day, say you are observing eight precepts. Then, sometimes, maybe even if you go for, you are becoming a samanera, if you are becoming a nun, 10 precept nun, then you are observing 10 precepts. So similarly, the what you call as upasampada sila is more consisting of so many precepts. Basically around 227 precepts are there. So that is being observed by the high ordination monks or bhikkhus, upasampada monks. And so that is what we call as upasampada sila. So it consists of, I mean, some many categories. I mean, there are four parajikas that have to protect. It's a must. And then another thing, sanghadisesa, what you call as, again, certain some grave or some gravity is there to those precepts. And then there are transactions that you are bound to maintain. So likewise, there are so many precepts involved, basically 220 plus another 7, 227. So that we call as upasampada sila. So all the higher ordained monks have to follow those precepts.
Question number 9 of 12. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, who is Kujuttara? I heard that she was an Anagami Upasika during Buddhist time. Bhante, you mentioned that she was a role model for the lay people. Bhante, would you please tell us how she reached this mental freedom as a lay person? Much appreciation and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, that's an interesting story actually. So probably you have heard about Samavati. Samavati is the queen for King Udena. And Samavati and there are other, say, queens were there in the harem. And Samavati is the main queen. And she had kind of a servant. That servant's name is Kujuttara. And what happened is, now the queen Samavati gives some money to Kujuttara to get flowers. And so daily what happens is, so Kujuttara go to the wherever the flowers are available, and she brings flowers and offer to Samavati. Samavati is a very devoted woman, and who is a follower of the Buddha's teaching, and she too is a, what you call, is a noble person. Not yet. She too is quite a faithful person. And one day, Kujuttara brings so many flowers. Now assume that previous days when she offers some amount of money, assume that Kujuttara used to bring, say, 100 flowers. Next day, actually, she brought 200 flowers. to the same amount. Then when Samavati questioned Kujuttara, why, what's the difference? How are you able to get so many flowers now, unlike before? Now Kujuttara explained, mentioning, so far I was stealing money. I only used half of the money. I have stolen some part, only used some amount to purchase flowers. That is what I have offered to you. But today, from today onwards, I am not doing it. I can't do it because I heard Buddha's teaching. I started following it. Now I can't break that precept. So I have spent the whole money and now I am giving the total amount. So I am now an honest person. So this change she is explaining to Samavati. Then Samavati is asking, could you explain the same Dhamma to us? Yes, of course. Then Kujuttara is teaching Buddha's teaching to Samavati and the other queens. So through Kujuttara, actually Samavati and the other queens are learning and they too attain. They too became noble women, noble persons after listening to Kujuttara. Kujuttara is the teacher now. Now, therefore, Kujuttara is someone who has taught Dhamma to the queen and the others. So therefore Buddha appreciated her task, her change in her life. And it is mentioned that she is a non-returner. And so that is being mentioned as a role model for the lay people.
Question number 10 or 12. This is a general question. The sound of silence is physiologically what we hear in the background of all environmental and created sounds. In scientific terms, it is physiological tinnitus. It is actually not heard. It is the equivalent of the sensation of one's body by one's somatosensory system. It is the auditory equivalent of touch. Therefore, pathological tinnitus is the equivalent of pain. In my own personal experience, the sound of silence, benign physiological tinnitus, seems like chirping of cicadas. It is quite restful. Some others experiencing this may find it distressing. Is this what Ajahn Sumedho referring to as the sound of silence? Or is he referring to some sensation of emptiness beyond the physiological tinnitus? Like our breath, exhalation and inhalation, it, i.e. the sound of silence, is always present. As it is always present in my experience, it is another quite good object of meditation to focus one's mind on. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, as you properly mentioned, so this may be a manifestation of touching sensation as a sound, and it may be available as a background, in the background, like the chirping of cicadas. So it indicates that mind is fairly balanced and free from any distractions, and inner chatter has fairly calmed down. So your mind is well attuned towards the silence. Therefore, it is mentioned as sound of silence. So Ajahn Sumedho also refers the same thing. So when sound of silence is present, so it indicates that mind is fairly internally calm, free from any defilements, free from distractions, say free from hindrances. So it's a kind of a progress, kind of a improvement. But on the other hand, I can't agree that we can use it as a meditation object. Because this is very much like a background, and the meditation objects are something conditioned, what we are using for the vipassana. So this is basically appearing like the background. So while we are staying, there are certain other phenomena more prominently arising. More prominently different other sounds may happen, other sights may happen, other touching sensations may happen. So while they happen, the sound of silence here like a background, like a canvas. So we are not taking that as a kind of a meditation object. rather all these different phenomena happening in the surface that we can use as a meditation object. So this may be thoughts, this may be feelings, this may be element characteristics. So they can use as meditation objects. But on the other hand, sound of silence, as you have properly mentioned, maybe we can say it's a very calm situation available in the background of the mind. And again, it may not last. I mean, it is not kind of something available forever. I mean, sometimes you may lose it. Not having it is also not a big thing. I mean, when your mind is attuned to some kind of a frequency, you are able to hear it. But later you are attuned to some different frequency, then you may not hear it. So therefore, don't expect it to be available throughout your life. So sometimes it is available, sometimes not.
Bhante, that ends the English questions for today. There's actually two more Sinhalese questions, but we've gone over time. Do we have time to go to those
two? Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll pass on to Auntie to read out those two questions.
මේ ප්‍රශ්න ටිකක් කලින් එවලා තියෙන්නේ එකක් ජනවාරි 10 අනිත් එක 6
හරි
අද දින කියලා තමයි කියලා තියෙන්නේ මම කියවන්න මේක සක්මන් භාවනාව ගෞරවනීය සාමින් වහන්සේ සක්මන් භාවනාව 22:10 අද දින සක්මන් භාවනාව සඳහා නිවසේ ලී පොළව අඩි 45ක් පමණ එල් හැඩය සහිත ස්ථානයක් තෝරා ගතිමි පළමුව දැන් ඉදිරියට තබ ඉදිරියට තබා හිටගෙන හොඳින් ඉන්න ඉරියව්ව වෙත අවධානය යොමු කළේ. ඉන්පසු සක්මන ආරම්භ කර සෙමින් ඉදිරියට ගමන් කරන ගමන් ඔසවනවා, ගෙන යනවා, තබනවා යන ආකාරයට ඇවිදින ගමන් පාදයේ යටිපතුලේ පොළව සමග ස්පර්ශයට අවධානය යොමු කළේ. නිවසේ අනිකුත් සියුම් සද්ද තියෙද්දි මට ඉතා හොඳින් සතිමත් බවකින් මේ ක්‍රියාව කරගෙන යාමට හැකි විය. වරින් වර මගේ හිත ඉවතට ගියත් නැවත සක්මනට යොමු කිරීමට හැකි වුණා. ටික වේලාවක් ගමන් කරන විට මගේ ගමන ඉතාමත්ම සෙමින් සිදුවන බව දැනුණු අතර මගේ දෙපා දිගේ ඉහළට කලවා ප්‍රදේශය දක්වා සියුම් වේදනාවක් දැනෙන්නට ගත් අතර පර්යංකයේදී මගේ මුව තුළ දැනෙන සියුම් නලියන ගතිය දැනෙන්නට විය. විනාඩි 25ක් විතර පසුව මගේ කකුල් රිදෙන නිසා කමඨහන් වාර්තාව ලිවීමට වාඩි වුනේමි. තවමත් කකුල් වේදනාව සියුම්ව දැනේ. මම හිතන අදට නෙවෙයි කියලා. සාමාන්‍ය ජීවිතයේ ඉතා වේගෙන් ඇවිදින මට මෙහෙම අමාරු නොදැනේ. මේ මාගේ අද දින කමඨහන් වාර්තාවයි. භාවනාව වැඩි දියුණු කර ගැනීමට උපදෙස් පතමි.
ඒක සාමාන්‍ය දෙයක්. ඒ කියන්නේ දැන් අපි ටිකක් උවමනාවෙන් තොරතුරු ටික බලන්න උත්සාහවන්ත වෙනකොට, ඒ කියන්නේ මොකද දැන් වෙන්නේ, කොයි පැත්තෙන්ද බර මාරු වෙන්නේ, එහෙම නැත්නම් කොයි කකුල දෙස්සලා වදින්නේ, කොතනද ඉස්සලා වදින්නේ, දැනෙන්නේ මොනවාද, තව මොනවාද මට බලා ගන්න පුළුවන්. ওই විදිහට අපි ටිකක් අර සෙවිල්ලෙන් ඒක බලනකොට අපේ වේගය අඩාල වෙනවා. එතකොට අපි ටිකක් හිමින් ඇවිදින්නේ, ටිකක් ස්ලෝ මෝෂන් යන ගතියකට අපි එනවා. ඒක වැරද්දක් නැහැ. ඉතින් ඒක තමයි සාමාන්‍ය. හැබැයි ඉතින් අපේ සාමාන්‍ය සුපුරුදු වේගයේ පවත්වන එක තමයි සාමාන්‍යයෙන් සිටිත. ඒ විදිහට අපි ඇවිදින ගමන් තොරතුරු ගන්න උත්සාහන්ත වෙනවා. ඔක්කොම දැනගන්න උත්සාහන්ත වෙනවා. හැබැයි ක්‍රමානුකූලව අපි මේ තොරතුරු තව තව සියුම් තොරතුරු උකහා ගන්න. සියුම් තොරතුරු මේ තුලින් තේරුම් ගන්න උත්සාහන්ත වෙද්දී වේගය පොඩ්ඩක් අඩාල වෙන්න පුළුවන්. ඉතින් ඒක සාමාන්‍ය දෙයක්. තේහින්දා ඔය දෙකම කරන්න. පටන් ගන්න සාමාන්‍ය වේගෙන්, කයට කියන්න එයාට හුරු පුරුදු වේගෙන් ඇවිදින්න කියලා. ඊට පස්සේ බොහොම යහුසුලුව ඒ තොරතුරු ටික ගන්න උත්සාහවන්ත වෙන්න. ඒ තුලින් හොඳට සතිය තහවුරු වුණාට පස්සේ ඊළඟට තව ටිකක් ගැඹුරට ගිහිල්ලත් මොනවාද තවත් මේක සූක්ෂමව දැනෙන්නේ කියලා හොයන්න ප්‍රමාණිකූල උත්සාහවත් වෙන්න. එතකොට ඉතින් පොඩ්ඩක් වේගය බාල වේවි. ඒක එච්චරම ප්‍රශ්නයක් කරගන්න එපා.
ඊළඟ ප්‍රශ්නය පරයන්ක භාවනාව 2022:06 කාලය මිනිත්තු 45යි. මූල කර්මස්ථානය උදරය පිම්බීම සහ හැකිලීම. අද දින සුපුරුදු පරිදි වාඩි වී මූල කර්මස්ථානයේ දෙස බලා සිටියෙමි. ආරම්භයේදී තොල්ල නලියන ගතියත් මූල කර්මස්ථානයත් එකසේ දැනෙන්න පටන් ගත්තේය. නමුත් මම මූල කර්මස්ථානයේ වෙත හිත යොමු කරගෙන සිටිය නිසා තොල්වල නලියන ගතිය සෙමින් පහව ගියේය. ක්‍රමයෙන් මූල කර්මස්ථානයේ සියුම් වන බව දැනුණු අතර වරින් වර එළියේ අධික වර්ෂාවේ හඬත් කාමරයේ ඔරලෝසුවේ හඬත් දැනෙන්නට විය. ඉන්පසු මගේ ශරීරය නොදැනී ගියේය. වරින් වර කකුල්වල යටිපතුල්වල සියුම් නලියන බව දැනී නොදැනී යයි. මගේ හුස්ම ඉතා සියුම් ලෙස ඉහළ පහළ යන බව වරින් වර දැනුනි. ඉතා සංසුන් මනසත් නොදැනෙන සිරුරත් දෙස මනසින් බලා සිටියෙමි. වරින් වර හිත එළියේ ශබ්ද දෙස ඇදී ගියත් සංසුන් සිරුර දෙසත ඇදගනිමින් සියුම් හුස්ම දෙස බලා සිටියෙමි. එලාම් එක නාද වෙනවත් සමග ඉතා සෙමින් දෙනෙත් ඇර එළියේ වර්ෂාව දෙස නිහඬව බලා සිටියෙමි. තාමත් මට ශරීරය නොදැනේ. හිමීට අත් කකුල් දිග හරිනවා. හරින විට හිරි නොමැති බව දැනගැතෙමි. මේ මගේ අද දින කමඨහන් වාර්තාවයි. තෙරුවන් සරණයි.
වාර්තාව දිගට කරගෙන යන්න කිසි ප්‍රශ්නයක් නැහැ. දිගට කරගෙන යන්න. කියන අර තමන්ගේ කයට අවධානය වැඩි වෙන බව, කය වෙතට අවධානය පැමිණෙන බව ඉතින් වාර්තාවෙන් පෙන්වුම් කරනවා. ඒක හොඳයි. ටික ටික මේ විදිහට තමයි ඉතින් අපි දියුණු වෙන්න තියෙන්නේ. ඒ කියන්නේ අපේ අවධානය තිබුණේ මෙතෙක් කාලයක් අපිත් එක්ක නෙමෙයි. අතන මෙතන අරයා මෙයා ගැන එහෙම ගිය විහිදිච්ච විසිරිච්ච අවධානයක් අපිට තිබුණේ. නමුත් දැන් අපි සතිපට්ඨානය දියුණු කරන්න පටන් ගත්තට පස්සේ විශේෂයෙන්ම කායනුපසනා මට්ටමේදී අපි වෙතට පැමිණෙනවා අපේ අවධානය. අපේ කයත් එක්ක ඉන්න ගන්නවා. කය හොඳට තේරෙන්න ගන්නවා. කය සිද්ධ වෙන පුංචි පුංචි දේවල් පවා දැනෙන්න ගන්නවා. ඒක තව තව දියුණු වෙනකොට තමයි අපේ මනසේ තියෙන දේවල්, මනසට එන දේවල්, හැඟීම්, ආහාර මෙහෙ තේරෙන ගන්නේ. ඒ නිසා කෙරෙන විදිය හොඳයි, දෙකට කරගෙන යන්න.
That's the end of the question, Singhalese questions. Right. There was one more question that came just now. There's a person asking for that PDF for that document that Bhante just shared. Yeah. It's there, so maybe we'll just, if that person wants to contact us, if they can't click it, and then we can send it to them if they're having trouble downloading it.
Yeah. Actually, another announcement, Chatu, actually, probably, I don't know whether Chamila or you are going to announce regarding the upcoming event on 5th.
We haven't. Sorry, we've forgotten about that. But I do know the one you're talking about. It's the 5th of February, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I can share the screen. I can share the screen actually. So this is the event. So actually on 5th, it marks Bhante Dhammajiva's 70th birthday. So for that, there's a felicitation ceremony organized at Nisarnamane. So if you are interested, please participate into this. And there is a very beautiful program we are going to arrange. The first program is in English. The first program is in Sinhala. There are two panel discussions in the evening with the participation of some distinguished guests, and all the information is available in our website, the Sarnavani website. So I request all of you to participate, and I'll put the registration link also I will put on the chat, so you can participate on this. And so therefore, this is something interesting, and it may start at 8 a.m. Sri Lanka time, and then the first one actually concludes at 11:30, and then the second session starts at 5:30, and it will go on with the third session until around 11:30. So this is information that I'd like to share with you.
We sent a link to that Swaminhansa in the previous email, but that's good that we shared it today. So if anyone wants the link, we can send it as well. This is the next Saturday.
Yeah, next Saturday, yes.
So that's the end of the questions for today. I'll give a small announcement. We need a little bit of help with question and answers this year. So if you'd like to help out with that, please send us an email and we'll see if we can give you a role. With that, I'd like to end the discussion for today. I'd first like to thank Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program every week, and we hope to do it again this year. Also to pass on our merits that we've accumulated in this program, and we hope to do it again this year. And also to the organizers and people seen and unseen working in the background to help make this work. And also to the participants, because without you, there would be nothing happening. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Therwan Sarnai.
Yeah, Therwan Sarnai. It's okay. Therwan Sarnai.